Brad Hayes, here's my question. Joe Biden?
Joe Biden? Biden has said that he's getting close to a decision.
And he's indicating that his family's all for it.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like he's going to go for it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's, I'm reading the same tea leaves that you are. It looks like, I mean, I think that there, to his mind, I mean, he's on the record on this, that he thinks he would have won in 2016. And that's a very difficult thing to let go of. I think, you know, see Bernie Sanders in that same camp. Bernie Sanders has said he thinks he would have beaten Trump. Biden says he thinks he would have beaten Trump. And, you know, there is a narrative on the 2016 election that if Clinton would have done a little bit better among Rust Belt, blue collar white voters, that she would have won. Right. All, you know, just
which,
a little.
Of course, the President Trump all along thought she was going to win.
Yeah, no, that's true too. But just this idea that you needed, you know, about, you know, 600,000, you know, voters in about three Rust Belt states to support the Democrat rather than the Republican, and all of a sudden we have a Clinton presidency, not a Trump presidency, is something that I think Biden feels is very much in his wheelhouse, right? That Biden has an appeal to working class voters. His Scranton narrative is one that he believes will play well in terms of the coalition that's necessary to bring a Democrat to power. And so given that, and given his popularity and name recognition within the party, he is in a highly advantageous position.
Sure.
Going into the race. So, you know, there are a few things against him, right? There's the issue of age. There's the issue that the party has moved and some of his old positions could come back to haunt him. We think about criminal justice policy and even identity politics. You know, as an old white guy, he's not exactly on the cutting edge of the Democratic coalition these days. But nevertheless, you know, he has an awful lot of wind in his sails. And so I expect him to enter the race.
So we go from him to Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie Sanders, who I've interviewed a lot on this radio station, I pretty well know the rhetoric. He is and who I supported, I'll be honest with you, the last time out. So now we got, I want to be funny and try to say 132 people running for president, but let's just say a lot of people are running for president, but the way I'm handicapping it right now, it's going to come down to Joe Biden versus Bernie. And you got a progressive wing, Bernie, and you got the institutional regular guys wing, and that's Joe Biden. And everybody else is out.
Everyone else is out. I'm not quite convinced of that yet. I think what we're seeing right now in terms of the kind of the popularity of those two people in Democratic circles is largely about name recognition, right? There was a poll that came out fairly recently that had some interesting results. It said that it asked basically what second choices were. OK, and so it was 24% of Biden supporters said that if he doesn't run, they'd vote for Sanders. 26% of Sanders supporters indicated that Biden was their second choice. Right. So, you know, in other words, a quarter of their coalition seems as if they were willing to support the other person. And if you're looking at policies, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Right. And which suggests that right now we're very much in the kind of the name recognition period of the primary. And that will eventually shift. Right. As people pay more attention, as the primaries draw nearer, people will begin to pay more attention to what's going on. And candidates will have more of an opportunity to distinguish themselves in ways that will affect name recognition, will affect the ways in which they resonate. So I think that there are candidates that are very much viable beyond Bernie and Biden. Yeah. You know, I think somebody like Harris, for example, we saw a pretty big jump after she announced in terms of support for her, in terms of the way in which she has name recognition, et cetera. The way in which she overlaps with important coalitions within the Democratic Party, you know, make her pretty viable. But I will say this, that somebody like Senator Harris probably would benefit the most from somebody like Biden not running, right?
Absolutely. In the same way, if you think about it, Elizabeth Warren loses a ton of support to Bernie.
I think that's true. Although, again, right now we're just not seeing a whole lot of tracking on the policy side, right? Right
well,
now
we are seeing, Brad, $6 million in one day when Bernie announces. That's incredible.
It is incredible. I don't think, though, right now what we've seen, although some of this is speculative because we haven't seen the numbers released since the formal announcements, but it doesn't seem like money has been a problem for any of the candidates as of yet. Now, eventually, that'll be more of an issue, but Warren has been laying down that apparatus for quite some time. Harris has as well, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't expect money to be a major issue right off the bat. For the entire duration of the primary, maybe it'll be more of an issue. But what we've seen recently is that money has just flooded into politics that have kept politicians viable, and that while money is important in elections, it doesn't pick winners. If that were the case, Jeb Bush would have received the nomination in 2016. He had so much more money than Trump, and yet just floundered. So I think that there's a lot of time left. There's a lot of time left for these things.
He floundered, and the other guy fluked.
And so yeah, we'll see. I mean, and that's part of the campaign, right? That some people are battle proven and have opportunities to really show what they're made of in the process, and others will flop and will have their hiccups. We've seen that probably more recently with Amy Klobuchar and some of the reports about her treatment of staff. Like that there are these things that pop up in campaigns, and you have to figure out ways of getting past them. Yeah. And if you can't, then it undermines your viability.
Hey, Brett Hayes, you're a Supreme Court expert. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she can't last forever. I wish she would, but she can't. That would probably give Trump another Supreme Court appointment.
Yeah, well, although, never doubt the RBG. She's back now to oral arguments after missing with yet another bout of treatments. So. I think it's one of those things that you're right, but I think she's going to fight tooth and nail to stay on the court until there's a replacement. The more interesting reports have been whether Justice Thomas is thinking about stepping down and giving Trump another appointment that way. That doesn't create ideological shift on the court, but it does make the Republican majority on the court a much younger coalition, right? Because Thomas is now the eldest Republican appointed justice, and there's an argument that okay, if Democrats win in 2020 and get a second term, maybe then a follow up from that in 2028, then maybe you get Thomas's seat. That would be where the eyes are. But if he retires, then that seat's gonna be there for several decades. So that has some interesting buzz to it, and I don't know that there's really any strong evidence that he's suggesting that, but there's been an awful lot of buzz about that recently. So we'll have to see.
Well, I got a lot more for you, Brad Hayes. We'll have to wait till the next time, but we'll be back. We've been talking to Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College, our scholar in residence, right here at WAMC.